Vices Radio Network.
The views and opinions of Muscle Minds is for entertainment and educational purposes only.
Gentlemen, we can rebuild him. We have the technology. We have the capability to make the world's first bionic man. Better than he was before. Better, stronger, faster.
Welcome to Muscle Minds with Dr. Scott Stevenson, Jordan Peters, and Scott McNally, part of the Advices Radio Network, a new voice in bodybuilding podcasting.
Welcome back to Muscle Minds. I'm Scott McNally, and with me, as always, is Dr. Scott Stevenson and Jordan Peters. Gentlemen, it is good to be back, the three of us together. Jordan, what's new, man?
Hey, guys. Gosh.
It's a big question. It's been a lot.
Yeah.
Just busy.
Yeah.
Yeah, but in a good way. And, you know, I'm very thankful to be busy the way I have been. I had probably the highlight of these last few months was the UK BFF British Finals and James taking his pro card.
Hell yeah.
That was a very, very emotional moment for me, to be honest. Because obviously we worked towards that for a whole year, spoke every single day for a year solid. We did two shows in the run-up to the British Finals. First was the Arnolds. And peaking James for the Arnolds was really difficult. Because he's a sweaty guy. So the way in which that we kind of approached his peaking really was just kind of unpredictable.
Where was it, Jordan? What location?
It was in Spain.
Okay.
So it was a touch hotter, but he's just sweaty anyway. So if you give him carbs, and you reduce his water, it's not always a sure thing as to how he's going to look. And that was the issue with the first one. And we learned that. So we obviously kept the water higher for the second one, which was the Diamond Cup in Poland. The look was much better. And he came second. We took the information from that into the finals and then really then nailed that one, which was very good. And then the end look on stage there was crazy full, but really, really nice and dry and just perfect, really. It was really good to see him take the win.
So when you say, I want to ask you, when you say that he sweats a lot, and that you kept the water higher, what's going on here? He's losing water, and then he ends up going flat more quickly?
So for the first show, we did a water taper down. So yeah. It was like 10 liters, 5 liters, 3 liters. Carbing up on the 5 and 3 liter days, which works really, really well with most people. Like, and then you could literally just do Vitsy and Dandelion before bed on the 3 liter day, and usually people fill up nicely as they kind of carry on drying out, and it's a really, really good peak.
Okay.
In that way, on the 3 liter day, James started to go soft. So he wasn't storing glycogen. We didn't have enough fluid available, so his blood sugars were accumulating. He wasn't storing glycogen, so it was like, holy shit, what do I do? So for
just
two meals,
over, don't you think, or just not filling out, or that's interesting.
Well, no, he didn't have enough fluid to shuttle glycogen into the muscle.
Okay.
So he literally just went completely soft. So for two consecutive meals, I increased his water slightly, decreased his carbohydrates, and added insulin to those two meals. worked absolutely perfectly, as you'd expect if you give someone a little bit more water and a little less carbs and then something to help them store the glycogen, he hardened up entirely again. And then we were right back on track with the carb up. So that worked perfectly. So that kind of saved it the day before. Nice. So I was, because at that stage I was kind of stressing. I was like, holy shit, obviously you look absolutely crap. It's the day before. But I was like, just do exactly what I say for these two meals and it'll pull back in. And it did. And then we kind of carried on, and he peaked on show day around 11 a.m. And thereafter, he kind of just faded and just got softer. Hmm. And I couldn't really tell you why he got softer. There could be a whole host of reasons why. But the issue was more just what went on the day before. So that was just a big red flag that he needs water high. So obviously, when we did that for the second one, we kept water high on the second day. Didn't go soft at all. Just carried on filling up and just stayed nice and hard and dry, and didn't spill over at any stage or anything. Because he didn't spill on the first time because there wasn't enough carbohydrates there for him to spill. We were nowhere near full. Mm. He just went soft. Mm. So this is the thing. When you don't have enough water and sodium going in and you have too many carbohydrates going in and you can't store that, then you're just going to go soft as hell because your body will start redistributing fluid.
Does he stress out when he starts before the show? How does his mental state?
No, he's brilliant, to be fair.
Yeah, okay. I figured he was.
Yeah, so that certainly wasn't the issue. Mm-hmm. So it was a physiological issue, which is why I knew it would fix from just doing like insulin for two meals. Yeah. And just putting a little bit more water in. And literally within 4 hours, he was back to looking normal again.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. So that was good. His body responded in that way. So then it was just a learning curve from that first one to take into the second one.
Hmm.
But we got there in the end, which was good. So that whole British was a busy weekend for me because I had 14 clients competing.
Wow. Oh, Jesus.
So I was running around all over the place, trying to make sure everyone... I had six place top six, so I was really pleased.
Nice.
Congratulations.
One of my female client, Donna, she won the women's physique class, which was, again, a great win. And then my heavyweight competitor, Alex, who I was absolutely dead certain that he'd won as well. And I think the whole crowd was too. And then he got fourth, which was very strange. Mm. But so that was another great result. So I was really happy with that. So it was a good weekend, just a very tiring one.
Man, it sounds like it. I could only imagine. That's a lot of people, and plus you were there in person then.
I was
navigating all this.
Yep. So I was running around from hotel to hotel, checking on people, making sure I wasn't really running, waddling.
Right.
Checking on people, making sure everyone was happy, everyone was on track. So I think when you peak people in person in that way, it's pretty easy to get right.
Hmm.
Especially when you've been seeing pictures of them a lot, and
mm-hmm.
I mean, you can push the fullness to the max, and you can then push the dryness to the max, and kind of just play along as you go, and just try and find a balance that's nice for them in the moment. And yeah, so that was a really, really, really good weekend. I'm so pleased.
Nice.
So that was good. And then we had the Universe this weekend gone, which was a great show. Again, NABBA Universe. I had six in that one, so that was kind of the same thing again. Again, had some good results. But I think this is the brunt of the competition season is over now, thank God. Because I'm at my wit's end. We've been
I bet. Does that mean you'll get to kind of shift gears a little bit and focus on other things now a little?
Yes, thank God. And I absolutely love doing what I do, but I'm so fucking burnt out.
I'm sure.
Yeah. Like, I'm so grateful to have such a good client base, but if I didn't have to speak to some of them for a while, I'd be really happy.
Yeah.
And I don't think they want to speak to me either, because I think for when you're doing daily check-ins for that last month and you're pushing them to the limit, some of them really had to dig in and work hard. And but no, it's all good fun. It's just nice to be able to have a bit of a break now.
Well, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've mentioned before when you've done a lot of traveling and stuff that it's hard for you to keep up on your own meals. How did that go with all the stress of this and all the running around?
Oh, no, it's fine. I have had my food with me, so that doesn't... I always get the food in.
Yeah.
It's just whether I can get enough in to keep my body weight up.
Okay.
But that weekend was all right, because on the first day, Luke and I went for dinner that night. And if you go for dinner with Luke, it means you're going to eat. We just ate a shitload, so that was good. So that kept me kept my weight up for that day.
Nice.
So that was cool. So that's about it for me, really.
So you had, we also had, now this was 2 weeks ago, you had the JP Grand Prix. How did that come out? How did everything turn out with that? Yeah. I'm sure, man, there's been a lot going on. 2 weeks ago seems like a lifetime ago at this point, right?
Yeah. So we had 230 competitors.
Nice.
Which is a busy show. And we sold out the venue.
Oh, no kidding.
So that was a good result. We took on about 10 grand in sponsors.
Okay.
So that made it very cool. So what's that in US? And it's about $14,000 US dollars.
Wow.
In sponsorship money.
That's awesome.
So we had all the sponsors there. And it was a really, really fucking good day. Obviously we had Dave Henry over to guest pose, and he was incredible.
I saw pictures. He looked out of this world still.
It was pretty cool. Like, he didn't fucking eat all day again. Like,
really?
I didn't see him eat. And then he just whips his top off and he's just like, yeah. Holy shit, you look ridiculous.
No kidding.
Now,
I'm sure you guys are busy. Did you get a chance to train with him at all or anything?
No, sadly not.
Okay. I figured, man, there was so much going on.
Yeah. Like, it would have been really cool to do that, because he got a full body session in the day before, but I was absolutely spent that day.
Yeah, I bet.
Like, I was so tired. So, because we filmed it with Rebecca, but like, pretty much I like intro the video and I'm like, well, Dave's going to train, but I'm too tired to train with him, so you can just watch him train.
Yeah.
Because that was quite a tiring and stressful weekend. Making sure everything was how it needed to be. We're in two minds whether we're going to do another one this year.
Oh, really?
Just because I think Corin and I want to just be a little bit selfish with our own goals next year.
Yeah.
So we're just going to limit the amount of coaching that we're going to be doing a bit more and probably limit ventures like that.
I could totally relate to that, though. I mean, I feel like you get into the coaching, you get into promoting these shows, I'm sure, because this is what you love doing. But at the end of the day, I mean, what you really love doing is bodybuilding yourself, right?
Yeah. And like, I obviously didn't compete this year, and I did intend to. But I dieted very hard for like 18 or so weeks. But when I got down to kind of the baseline weight where I was ready, where I was leaner than I was last year and more muscular than last year, so I definitely took a step forward in both senses, but I just didn't really like how I looked.
Okay.
It just still wasn't good enough for where I was about to go and compete. Like, I was about to compete in Korea against Peter Mulder and Sean Taverner, and I would have got fucking destroyed.
What did you feel like you were lacking still?
Just balance and flow to my physique, and just an overall nicer look. I can't really put my finger on it.
Okay.
Obviously, like, I'm my own biggest enemy when it comes to critique.
Sure.
But I just know for a fact that it just still wasn't good enough.
Mm.
So
what can you do about that?
I think I think I made some mistakes during my dieting that cost me a lot of fullness in my legs, and I think that probably pissed me off the most. So when I got all the way down, I kind of compared to the pictures the week before I flew out to Brazil last year, and I was leaner and I was heavier and my upper body was a lot bigger, but my legs weren't as good. So as soon as I saw that, I was like, fuck that. I was like, it just pissed me off so much. I was like, I'm not training so hard to, because I don't really care like what stage I step on, or I just want to present something that I'm proud of.
Yeah.
Like, so, and I wasn't. I didn't like how I looked. So, I think
what were the mistakes, Jordan? Can you pinpoint?
Yeah, for sure. I can. I would say that I had actually a discussion with Ben Pokulski to try to like pinpoint this more so. Obviously, Ben has the best legs in the world. So I was like, well, what am I doing wrong here? Why? I sent him the pictures before and after. And we came to the conclusion that I was just absolutely obsessing over like external load. And to be honest, I was. I really, really lost a lot of connection with my legs.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the actual stimulation that was occurring was getting less and less each week.
Interesting.
Because I was just doing everything I could to move weight from A to B. So this is where becoming so obsessed with logbooking and thinking, no, if I hold my strength, I won't lose leg mass. It actually bit me back. Because I'm powerful, and if I want to use inertia to move the weight on a squat move, I can. I've got a really strong lower back. Like, my lower back is my densest body part. So if I want to use my lower back to move the weight, I can. And that's what happened. And when I watch back some of the videos in the last 2 to 3 weeks, I watch it back and I'm like, my legs aren't fucking working in that set. Like, no wonder they started to go, because you're not even telling your body, hey, stick around. Like, you're under stress right now. You need to stay.
Yeah.
And so that was a big reflection period for me. And it's,
I think a lot of people can, I'm sorry to interrupt, but just this is an awesome point. A lot of people, you can get stronger as you go through a prep, and that happens a lot. But once you get as strong as you are, Jordan, that's not as going to be as likely to happen due to all other things being equal in terms of your activation strategy, your the biomechanics you're using, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, you know, when you're doing moving the loads you are, it's just like, you know, your chances are you're doing the things you're doing more than when you were, you know, 20% weaker years ago.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So when you reflect on that and you think to yourself, holy shit, that was a really fucking big mistake. No wonder my legs dwindled away the way they did. So that really, really did fucking piss me off, to be honest.
I bet, because you were putting in what you thought was 100% and doing what you thought was 100% right. So I can see how that'd be frustrating.
I was destroying myself, as always. Mm-hmm. I was training. Oh my God, that last month before I stopped dieting, I just kept finding mentally another level to training. I was training so hard. Like, before some of the really hard leg sets, where I was, the loading was so high. No joke, I was working myself up so much that I literally had like tears rolling down my cheeks before the set.
Wow.
Because I managed to build up so much aggression and so much anger and so much, like, I will not drop the loading on this set. It is not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I would unrack the weight and I would not even feel the load because I had that much aggression and that much anger and that much adrenaline in that moment. But that's not really that effective for bodybuilding, is it?
It's a beautiful place, though.
Yeah,
it is. You know, honestly,
I love it there.
I do too. And I'm very good at going there. That's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I really, really did enjoy some of those sessions. Like, literally, Like, I vividly remember before one of the V-Squad sets, I actually was crying mid-set just because I was so fucking angry at the idea of how badly I wanted to do well in this competition. And it's funny when you just have all this drive, but if it's misdirected, then at the end point, you can miss the mark by a long fucking way. And sadly, I did. So I called a day on that, thought, right, let's start again. Let's recorrect all of my form to ensure that everything is immaculate. I'm now getting much, 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 much better pumps in my legs as well. And I'm feeling pumps in portions of my legs that I've never felt before. So
there's a strategy. I want to interject something because it might. This is just a strategy that I've used because I've done what you're talking about more than a couple times. And one of the things I'll do, because that energy is like it's unlimited, like you're inconquerable at that point when you load up like that, like you're indomitable, you're unstoppable. And I will take that then, and then when you're getting those last couple reps, I'll try to at least it's sort of a habit I've made where I'll redirect that energy in the last couple reps directly into destroying the muscle, as opposed to I'm going to get another rep or get another rep. And it's hard to, it's not like this concrete, like logical, you know, Vulcan, like, you know, spoken strategy that I can say this is exactly what I'm doing. But it's a reminder to myself that not to do kind of what you're talking about. Just go, like, I'm going to get another rep. It's me versus gravity. I'm going to keep moving the weight. Rather, I'm going to just completely redirect in the muscle. And a good training partner will tell you that when they see you doing that. I'm sure Corin's, you know, probably giving you 1,000 reminders. But it's a habit that I've kind of developed. And I didn't even really think about it. I don't think I've ever told anyone about this, but I do that. And it'll sometimes make that last rep or two look like you punked out, from the exterior. But in effect, it's like, no, you actually have done what you're trying to do and made sure that it was the musculature that was the failing, the target musculature that was the failing point. So it's kind of the best of both worlds in a way, because you can drive through, and then when you start to realize, okay, you know, this totally adrenalized strategy of just, you know, pummeling my way through the set is not what I want. I need to redirect this and sort of narrow the focus, adjust the lens so that it's onto the muscle. But you can still, like, take that, like, there's nothing that's going to stop me attitude and use it, which is kind of the fun part. So
that's what I've done now. I'm ensuring that everything for the last 6 weeks is, I've readjusted my form a lot, and I took a step back in regards to my loading initially. It's pretty much.
What's that done with your numbers, Jordan? As far as the actual percentage of weight you're lifting now compared to then. I mean, I'm sure you're still really strong, but just out of curiosity, how far back have you had to curtail it in order to really get that mind-muscle connection?
Probably about 20%.
Okay, which is still probably a lot stronger than, you know, most people stepping in the gym.
Yeah.
But I can, like, it's really strange now, because the way I'm doing exercises over these last few weeks, I finish the set and I'm like, holy shit, God, like, I've not really felt that before. And then I think to myself, hang on, what the fuck was I doing before I was doing this?
Man, this is amazing to hear you say this. This really is.
I've stopped doing my heavy incline barbell presses. Like, I'm really good at those, and I've got up to doing 4.5 plates for like 5 reps. That's my PB.
Okay.
I couldn't tell you what was doing what on an incline barbell press. I couldn't tell you where I was feeling anything. Am I feeling it in my triceps? I don't know. Maybe. Am I feeling it in my chest? Maybe a little bit. Am I feeling it in my front delts? Maybe a little bit. I don't know. Am I even really feeling it anywhere? No, not really. I just know that I'm a fucking good incline barbell presser. So, and now I'm like, how does that really help me get bigger? Sure, it did and it worked, but
yeah.
So when you diet down and you're kind of like not really stimulating much of anything, why would stuff stick around? And that's what I'm kind of asking myself. I'm like, you aren't really challenging the muscle fibers enough to say, no, you don't go anywhere. You stick around because you need to do some work here. And like, I've always ended my preps kind of getting a little bit flatter than I thought I should. And kind of always, especially from like compared to the start point, ending a little bit lighter than I should. And I really think that this is why. I think that, and what's kind of frustrating as well is from an external perspective, it's always looked like I've lifted with a macular form because I just have very good eccentric. But that's kind of, that's just how it looks from an external. From an internal thing, I'm still lifting in probably ways that are just far too biomechanically favorable for me. And this is probably sounding a little bit contradictory to some of the stuff that I've previously said, but in honesty, it probably is because I'm just taking a bit of a U-turn on some stuff at the moment.
Which that's what's so amazing, man, because it's an evolution of your thought, and I'm excited for you because this is only going to take you further. I can see it, you know.
I think that my body won't have a choice.
Yeah.
Because like I said, I'm finishing a session and I'm like, well, I've really, really never felt the muscle like this before, ever. Like ever in the whole time I've been training. It's really strange, actually.
Well, I have a question for you related to this, because I've watched some of the videos and I have a thought first that's kind of interesting, because some people luck out, like when they do an incline press or bench press is a great example. For them, biomechanically and just natural, their neural activation strategy is such that it's a great chest exercise.
Yeah,
and for some people, they're just delt pressers. Yeah. And I think what can happen is if you're doing a decent job and you're progressive with overloading, you're getting your chest, you know, involved as maybe during your off season, and then when you start to diet down, that's when your nervous system isn't quite in tip top shape. And if you do tend to be a delt presser, you can maybe manage to hold on to those loads, although people lose pressing strength quicker than anything else I've noticed.
Yeah, for sure.
But you'll hold on to those loads, but you then revert back to what your normal, your sort of natural activation strategy will be in order to do that. So you end up doing your anterior delts in this example more so than the pecs. But what you're saying is interesting, because you were always an example when people ask, how should I do my pump sets in fortitude training? I said, well, at one end of the spectrum, there's Jordan, who likes to just like do like a really heavy kind of straight set, like 15 to 20. And then, you know, you can do it the other side, which is like the fives into the hole and reverse 21s and all those, where your whole idea is to really create the metabolic stress in the targeted muscle with laser-like focus. And then also practice to the extent you possibly can doing that during those pump sets, so then it will carry over to your heavy loading sets too. Yeah. So what you're saying is, like, it sounds like you maybe, if you were to do, not that you're saying you should or shouldn't, but if you were to do fortitude training, you might do the pump sets differently now. Okay.
I absolutely would do it differently. Like, even with my heavy loading, I would try to stay totally engaged in the muscle a lot more so than before. It's actually really funny you say that, because over the last couple of weeks, I've really thought to myself, I want to do fortitude again and give it a crack.
Oh, cool.
With this new kind of refocused mindset, because especially because nothing made my legs grow like fortitude. Nothing. Like, my legs were by far the biggest and the best they've ever been doing fortitude, hands down. I just don't think that my upper body did quite as well comparatively to my legs versus a push-pull leg split. But I think that that could change massively with
adjustments.
A refocused adjustment.
Yeah.
I really do.
Just modify.
I think that I probably just wasn't open-minded enough before to embrace the idea of lifting in that fashion.
Well, it was working. I mean, it's obviously it's work. So, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But now you're seeing where there's some cracks in that. And
yeah, for sure. I mean, it certainly allowed me to build a lot of muscle. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm at the point now where I'm like, I want to get better. Like, I still want to get better. I still want to get bigger. I still want to improve. And it's like there are areas on me that are just lagging. So the balance is off. Like, I just don't look like how some of these guys look. Yeah, I'd be bigger than them, but I know for sure I wouldn't beat them. So I'm just trying to think to myself, how can I address this? And so far, I'm really happy with the way things are going. And I think that next year, I might be able to improve enough to really show that the adjustments in what I've done have been worth it.
Nice.
It's been a very useful kind of reflective period for me.
It sounds like it. Now, this stuff that you're talking about here, you had mentioned that you had talked with Ben Pekulski. Is some of what you're talking about now kind of what you gleaned through your conversation with him?
Yeah. He said that he's had the exact same thing happen to him in preps where he's ended with his legs kind of just being a little bit more deflated than he would have expected them to be. And if you watch Ben train his legs, it's like this insane connection he has with them.
Yeah.
Like he moves very, very heavy loading with his legs with just, it's just perfect for him. And you can see that the way he connects with his muscles is just amazing. So it's just, it was a nice conversation with him, and then had some really good chats with Joe Bennett, who is Ben's head trainer at MI40. And we just talked through some stuff just to try to narrow down maybe some exercise selection to reinforce some of these internal cues that would help me. So it's nothing that I really haven't done before, but it's just a few little things. I've just gone back to banding a lot of my leg press movements and hack squat movements just to make sure then that I'm really concentrating on at the lockout portion using my quads through the full range. Because again, it's a little thing that you think about. The top of a leg press is where it gets easy,
right?
Like the lockout point of a leg press is easy. So if you have band tension there and you have to keep driving against the band tension, it's going to keep more of your quads engaged, and that I think works pretty well for me. So that was one of the nice reminders to go back to doing that, because I used to do that a lot, and I couldn't really say why I moved away from it. Probably just couldn't be bothered to rig bands up.
Too adrenalized, wanting to get more weight on the bar.
Yeah. This was the thing. It's like just a constant obsession of like load on the bar. But like, again, that has worked. So I don't really want to move too far away from that. But
right.
it's now just like the constant reevaluation that we all need to do on ourselves as we kind of progress.
Mm-hmm.
Because like, one thing that I've kind of is reminded me is that just stop being married to any one idea. I sometimes get a little guilty of that. And it's like just, you need to just stay so open-minded to being adaptive, because if something's not working, then you need to work out why and you need to change some stuff.
I get it. And I can see, because you keep coming back to, I think the critical point here is that the stuff that you're saying you needed to change has worked so well.
Yeah.
You know, that it's not as if you were just kind of beating your head against a wall blindly. This is something that's been taken you further than most of us have ever gone, you know. So I totally get that. To have that insight, man, to be able to draw back now, I think that's pretty awesome. It's really cool to hear.
What's an interesting kind of thought process is, let's say, for example, I ditched my logbook for my leg training at 8 weeks out. And I went in the gym. And I just trained as hard as I fucking could. And I went to absolute eccentric failure on whatever numbers I could get that day. But I made sure that my reps were absolutely immaculate. As the prep went on, I'm sure that my strength would probably decrease by about 15% or so by the end of the prep versus like an off-season setting, just because of how strong I potentially have been able to get in off seasons. So I think that would be a fair regression, 15% drop in strength.
Yeah.
I'm fairly certain if I did it in that manner, I would probably have very little drop in overall leg mass. because I was able to stay connected and able to stimulate muscle mass.
I bet.
And tell it to stick around versus what I did, where I actually gained strength through my whole set, but I lost leg mass.
Mm. And that right there, I mean, you painted it black and white. It means those are neurological gains that you've lost, not muscular gains.
Mm.
So like what you said, all those accommodating actions that you're doing, like use your low back on a squat or what have you, those are neurological things, you know. Then that's who cares.
Yeah.
Like, it's easier on your joints to use lower weights, which are probably better for you.
Sure.
Absolutely.
So
this is hilarious. So over the last 6 weeks, I don't know if you guys remember, I couldn't shift my elbow tendonitis for about a year.
Yeah.
Mm.
Taking me 3 weeks and it's gone.
No kidding.
Wow. Gone. I don't have to wear any elbow sleeves at all. I don't have to wear knee sleeves anymore. I don't have to wear elbow sleeves.
Huh.
I
have a confession related one. I haven't worn any like knee wraps or knee sleeves since I've been doing fortitude training, but I wore them for like the decade before that. Pretty much. Yeah. Same kind of thing.
So I was doing like 100 kilo dead stop skull crushers and shit like that.
Oh,
it was fucking destroying my elbows.
I blew a tendon thinking about that.
Right.
Exactly. And like every time I get a flare up of tendonitis in my elbows, it's usually because of that exercise.
Hmm.
But I'm like, oh, fuck it. Like, that's a great mass builder. Let's do this. Let's do that shit again. And then it's like, no, you can't build mass if you have fucking tendonitis.
No, you can't. Not very well.
So, you know, this is the dumb shit that I did for just years and years and years. Mm-hmm. And then now I'm like, right, use tricep isolation moves as just ways to fill your triceps up with blood.
Mm.
And just squeeze the shit out of them and just focus on that. Focus on literally not letting your humerus move away from your body. Think about that your arm is literally just locked in stone, and all that moves, all that initiates the movement is a tricep contraction. And I can actually see that my triceps look better already.
Wow.
Mm.
I've never done that shit all my life. I've been, at one point, I got my tricep pushed down so heavy, I had to wear a dipping belt to keep myself anchored to the floor.
I've done that before too.
Exactly. Yeah. How fucking dumb is that? So, like, it just makes me laugh that when you kind of end up just chasing load on things that maybe you shouldn't, it's not the most appropriate of movements. Mm. So I'm really happy that my tricep tendonitis is gone.
One of the things that, I don't know if I have this in the book or not, but one of the things that led me to the pump sets with fortitude training and exactly what you're talking about was on both triceps, I've had small tears, just like little tears. It's a divot you can see when I'm lean enough. It's like nothing that, like, holy shit, look at the, you know, the ice cream scoop hole in the guy's muscle, but it's there, and it's visible. So I had to work around that, and I couldn't do a whole bunch of things. I had to do just fly movements and, you know, some side laterals and that sort of thing for delts and chest. And when I started training triceps, I had to go really slow, perfectly controlled, because I was deathly afraid that I was going to tear the muscle where that previous tear, small tear was. And after about each time this happened, I had to do it on like over the course of a year, each time it happened, my triceps looked better than ever.
Mm-hmm.
From not having trained them for a while, so I kind of got out of whatever overtraining rut I was in, or overreaching, let's say. I don't think I wasn't overtrained in the formal say so, but I wasn't recovering probably as well as I could have. And then I just started training with perfect form like that, because I couldn't afford to do any sloppiness, and use a heavy load. But I had to, so it was like perfect laser like focus with really light weights. And my triceps looked the best they'd ever looked at that point.
Hmm.
It's like, okay, there's a lesson there, I think. I'm gonna pay attention to this. I like these pump set types of things. Maybe we should add these to a program, you know? So I hear you, man. It totally happens. You know, it's those, sometimes you have to make a mistake, you know, a number of times, or it has to be so glaring before you figure it out.
Yeah, for sure.
Right in your face the whole time.
Hmm. If you've enjoyed Scott Stevenson's contribution to Muscle Minds, you can learn more about him, his products, and his services at fortitudetraining.net. And if you order any of his products or services, you get a free subscription to his message board where he answers questions daily. Also, on October 21st, come out to see the NPC Florida Clash of Champions, co-promoted by Dr. Scott, and featuring some great guest posing with IFBB Dave Henry and Guy Cisternino. Go to fortitudetraining.net to learn more about all these products, services, and events offered by Scott Stevenson. Muscle Minds is made possible in part by Jordan Peters. If you've enjoyed listening to Jordan today on Muscle Minds, check out his website, trainedbyjp.com. The site offers over 50 hours of video content, covering everything from the most basic approach to training and nutrition for beginners, all the way through advanced anabolic and insulin strategies for seasoned competitors, and have questions answered daily on their forum sections. So check out trainedbyjp.com. And hey, on October 8th, come on out to the JP Grand Prix with a 20,000 pound prize fund, IFBB Dave Henry guest posing, and Jordan Peters running the show. This promises to be an awesome event. Learn more at jpgrandprix.co.uk. You know, I wanted to talk a little bit more about the contest that you guys both were responsible for promoting. And first I wanted to ask Jordan, before we talked about Scott's contest, now you actually, like you said, you had sponsorship and whatnot. You guys offered cash prizes for this. That's so unlike anything that happens in the U.S. You know, everything here in the NPC, you get a trophy and that's it. Ooh. How does that work over there?
I mean, we raised enough sponsorship money to kind of cover a good chunk of it. And then the rest of it, we just paid out of our own pockets.
And so, but what was the organization that you were doing this with?
PCA.
PCA. And okay. And so that you can do cash prizes with that. That's not any kind of issue for, and that goes for amateurs as well then?
Yeah, sure.
That's awesome.
We gave it away to the amateurs. We had a pro class too, but it was 20,000 UK pounds we gave away to the amateurs. So it was really cool. So obviously top three in each class got a nice payout, and I think it just made everyone's day a little bit sweeter for them.
Hell yeah.
And then those that won the overall, the guy and the girl, they got extra again. So that was a good day. Obviously we're fortunate enough to rather put that kind of money up and make a loss on the day because overall for us, that show was a fantastic marketing opportunity. Hmm. So we would have made that money back just because of like signups to the site and like online sales of ebooks and whatnot. So for us, we don't really mind making a loss on the day because we know overall that month, it really is going to turn into a positive month. Whereas a lot of the promoters probably won't rather see that in the same way.
Mm.
So they're not going to rather take a hit on the day in that sense because it's just not going to really pay them back in the same way. And I totally get it. Like, you're going to really want to do something to make a loss.
Yeah.
Whereas for us, we're quite fortunate that for us, it's generally always going to turn out to be a gain.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, it's so different than what we have available in the U.S. I've never heard of, you know, competing at an amateur show, at least in today, you know, at least in the modern age, where you can actually win money, you know, as a prize. And you were saying, too, that you felt that actually helped with the level of competition, that there was a few guys there that really, they came to win, huh?
Oh, no, it was, that was one of the biggest comments that we had. Like the standard was crazy high. Hmm. Like I was very surprised myself just how good the standard was. Like top three in every class were exceptional. So it was very good.
That's cool.
So yeah.
So PCA go ahead, Jordan.
Like normally you'd have like one or two guys in really, really good shape in a show. Like this was like one or two guys in really, really good shape in every class.
That's awesome.
So it was really cool to see. And in some classes there were like four guys that were like, holy shit, like all four of these guys are fucking on.
That's cool.
And that was just amazing. Well, Scott, sorry.
Oh, I was just gonna say, so obviously PCA doesn't differentiate amateur versus pro in terms of prize money. Is there a level of prize money? Are you capped for amateur versus pro, or is it really just
no.
really? So you could offer the same. It's just level of competitors. So you have to like won an amateur show to be a pro qualifying show, and then you're a pro. But
yeah,
you could just clean house if you found shows where they're giving out good prize money. You could be an amateur, and I mean, eventually, would you have to take a pro card? Like, could someone just like stay a ringer amateur and
yeah, they could do that.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, because that
definitely
that's
good.
Yeah, so that's it's interesting that that's great for the athletes.
Yeah, you
know? Yeah.
It's just an interesting business decision because it's so different. Like you were saying, Scott, from how we typically differentiate amateur versus professional. Those definitions. I mean, if we had Victoria on here, she could fill us in on the history of how those things are defined. But there's a really rich history of amateur versus professional. If you ever watched the movie Chariots of Fire,
okay,
which actually takes place partly there in the UK, it's about like I think it was like in the it's around World War II, I believe. Maybe it was the 1930s. 100 meter sprinters, and there's the big deal is that the Americans have a coach, and they're competing in the Olympics, the 100 meter dash, and the Americans, because they have a coach, they're considered professional, according to the folks in the UK. And it's kind of I don't want to ruin the whole movie, but the whole movie is depicts you know how important that idea was of an amateur who's someone who does the endeavor for the love of the endeavor only, and they have a balanced life in other ways and blah, blah, blah. Hmm. Whereas the professional can be someone who's single-minded in their pursuit and they're making money, and it's a totally different approach to, in this case, the running. So we obviously do it usually on money here, but there's now it's like it's doesn't for a PCA. They've got just nothing but whether you decide you want to compete as a pro because you've done well enough to earn that. So that's interesting. I mean, I'm not against it at all, but it's definitely different. It's going to attract people too. It's a nice marketing strategy, really.
That's what I'm thinking too. Yeah.
It is. And obviously with the shift in regards to federations that's occurred with the splitting of the IFBB Pro League away from IFBB International has seen what will be huge changes here in the UK in regards to the dominant federation.
Yep.
So previously, UKBFF was the dominant federation. Because now I'm not really afraid to even say it, the president of that federation is a fucking dickhead. Before, I wouldn't openly said that because I've had to go to UKBFF shows and I've had clients. Like, I would never have said that before the Brits because James needed to win his pro card, and it was the president that would have been given him his card. Now that I never have to go to that show again, I think we can all openly say that guy is a fucking prick. Right? So UKBFF will die. Not just like a little bit. They are going to catastrophically crash and fucking burn.
Wow.
No one will do UKBFF next year. Because they've lost their pro card. They lost their only bargaining tool that they had to lure people in. Because everyone knows that they're that president's a bell end. And no one's wanted to compete with them, but they just have had to because of the route they've had to go to achieve pro status. So they've had to put up with him and his bullshit. Thinking that he, oh my God, I'm not even going to get into the shit he's done. But
yeah.
I've heard now that
that's.
Of it.
Yeah, now that that's been taken away, you can FF or Crash and Burn. So for those that want to achieve professional status, they will do the NPC shows that are all over Europe and across the UK. But the NPC shows are asking for no allegiance in regards to only competing with them.
That's cool.
Which means then if these lads and these girls that also want to win some cash and compete at a federation where they're judged fairly, they're treated respectfully, they'll also then compete with the PCA alongside.
Hmm.
The PCA next year will be the dominant federation in the UK, without a doubt. We did very well this year as a federation. And I say we because I obviously as a promoter, I'm very much part of that. But next year is going to be game over. Like, this year, when we picked our show dates, we obviously had to pick them around, like, oh, we'll probably have to wait for this federation and that federation to announce their national shows.
Yeah.
Not next year. Next year, we're like, right, our shows are going here, and those idiots are going to have to place their shows around us. Just because they won't compete. It's just, it's going to be an interesting shift next year. And for those listening, if anyone is considering competing with the UKBFF next year, don't. seriously, because you won't be treated with respect. You won't be judged fairly. The last of the fair judges that I knew that still existed with them left this weekend after the British finals. Paul Knight, who was probably the last decent judge they had left, is now the head judge for the NPC shows in the UK. And which is brilliant. Brilliant news for those people that want to take pro cards because he was the last fair judge. And now he's head judge of the Federation or the route for you to get your pro cards. So I'm really pleased to hear that, actually. Because he's a really...
I don't know anything about the NPC in Europe at all. This is actually...
It hasn't really established yet, that's the thing.
Okay.
It's kind of just getting on a roll as they go. The first show in the UK is in March.
Uh-huh.
And Bob Chick obviously has a big hand in this.
Yeah.
And basically, the show's an open show. You pay your registration fee, you turn up. If you win, you get a pro card. Simple as that.
They will all be pro qualifiers? Are they going to do like, will they do like they do in the U.S. where there'll be just regular NPC shows, and there'll be national qualifiers or all pro qualifiers?
There are four shows in the U.K. All of them are pro qualifiers.
Okay.
Huh. And you have to be a UK citizen?
Open to worldwide.
Wow.
Shit.
Every show, there's an NPC show across the world, obviously aside from the US ones, because they're a little different, are open shows to anyone.
Hmm.
So
you have to qualify to it for it?
Nope. Totally open.
Huh. Might be fun.
I hear the gears turning, Scott.
I know. I'm just thinking I'll make a vacation.
It is. It's a fantastic opportunity. There's 25 of these shows alone across Europe.
Wow.
Right, so this now for me is like, I'm going to get my IFBB Pro card next year. There's just absolutely no way I won't. Like, I know that I can do it.
Uh-huh.
It's an amazing opportunity for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Whereas previously, you'd have had to have gone through the UKBFF. You'd have got fucked over by the idiot president. Like, you'd never have been sent to the international shows that you could have gone to. Like, I remember last year, we were, like, trying to get James to do the Amateur Olympia in Hong Kong. They wouldn't even reply to his fucking emails.
Really?
UKBFF. James has won the British title twice. So he's one of their champions, and they wouldn't even reply to his emails. Like, he's like, I'm trying to like plan my year here. I'm trying to plan where I can pick up my pro card. How about you actually do your job and reply? Like, how rude is that? And that's just what they do. They just don't really, they didn't really do anything. They don't really treat anyone. Oh, no. Yeah, once I get started on that shit, I won't stop.
So, you know, speaking of shows, so your show, that was 2 weeks ago. And then last week, Scott, you had your show down there in Florida, and you got to hang out with Dave Henry and Guy's sister Nino. How did all that go?
It was a blast.
Yeah.
It was awesome. It was really, you know, it was a small show. As we talked about before, the show Florida is just overflowing with shows. Actually, I heard they're doing this in Texas now, and they're going to do it in Florida. They're going to limit the number of shows.
Oh, really?
Maybe just Yeah, I don't know if they're going to booty one out, but probably just limit the people who want to institute new shows and just let some of the other ones kind of fall the wayside. I don't know exactly, but that's my guess. So we had a show, I think we probably just kind of about broke even money-wise, and but it was a blast. We had an awesome venue. From what I heard, actually, there were like, after our show, the venue was so nice. It's called the Miramar Cultural Center. I should, probably shouldn't even say that. Edit that out, Scott. Take that out.
So okay.
there were like four promoters who called like the next day, just trying to like see when they could schedule their show there.
Really?
Because they saw pictures. Like, oh my gosh, that venue's phenomenal. So yeah, it was a blast. Went down early with the dogs, stayed in the rental house. Picked up Dave on Thursday. And we went and trained after that at Tony's gym. And then Friday, Guy came in and we had the check-ins. We got to meet the crew. The expediting crew was absolutely phenomenal. If you go to NPC First Call Out on Instagram, you'll see some pictures. This guy's name's Richie. It's awesome. He's the head expediter. He's hilarious. He's a selfie master.
Yeah.
I don't know if they don't think they all made it up, but he was just like, I was in selfies sometimes. It was him and then like five or six other people that I had never seen before other than that day on that occasion. Because he would just pull people in. He could just magnetize people to his phone. He must have taken 200 selfies and they're all hilarious. He takes a selfie and my favorite part is he takes a selfie and then he looks at it and goes, yeah, that's it, baby. Just like that. It's hilarious. So it was just a great, great energy and vibe the whole time. Show ran, you know, it was nice and short. We actually had, you know, some really good competitors too.
Yeah.
It was small, but our overall winner was a badass.
What class was he in?
I think he was heavyweight.
Okay.
Maybe he's a light heavy. He's going to do nationals. And because nationals is just a few weeks out, and so is our masters winner. A lot of guys that are going to do nationals were doing the show to qualify or just to tune up, so to speak. So our winners were really pretty phenomenal. And the next day we did the IFBB Pro Extravaganza.
Oh yeah, yeah,
That was fun. That was over at Tony's gym. It was small. It's so interesting because. I mean, and this is probably a failure of, you know, of marketing on my part, but, and it's also, Jordan can maybe attest to this because it seems like the level of interest in learning and like getting sort of one-to-one interaction with people who've been doing this sort of thing for a while is different in the US, which is the UK. So we have this, I mean, this was free to the competitors.
Yeah.
It was, we had five IFBB pros there. A fitness competitor who's now does physique. A woman's bodybuilder who's done both physique and fitness. So this is Ginny Lankowski, as mentioned last there, and Natalie Graziano, who's a doctor of physical therapy. She did it in her presentation on the bodywork technique she uses, Graston. And then we had a new IFBB pro. So, and he's spent like 13 years getting his pro card. So he's got some experience. Nice. And then Dave, and Guy Cisternino, who's just phenomenal. And we probably had, we had maybe a 12, 15, 20 people there.
Really?
People came and went. Yeah. And you put that on some places and people would pay $100 for that.
Sure.
Easy.
Sure.
Yeah. So, and I did a talk on, same one I'd done in the UK at Body Power. The PowerPoint, so that was fancy and fun. So cool. It was a great audience. People were there, were awesome, and it's just interesting because that in of itself could have been an entire event. And I just think that's kind of how the difference in sort of the intellectual approach to this endeavor that I've always noticed between at least the UK, maybe all of Europe, but definitely the UK and the US. That kind of, I mean, what do you think, Jordan? If you had like five pros, and then of course people know me more so in the UK than in the US. But had a seminar like that, and you charged like
I think it would be a success.
Yeah, it'd be. I mean, it was a success, but it would be much more attended. I think so. It's just fascinating, but it was fun. And we got some people into Tony's gym, and So it just was a great weekend. Just a really good time all around.
Man, it sounds like it. And just and you were rooming with Guy and Dave too. So
yeah,
and I would have liked to have been a fly on a wall for all that. I'm sure you guys had all sorts of fun antics through the weekend.
All those 212 guys, they're such a close knit group of guys.
Yeah,
with like Jose and Flex. Actually, Guy, I think this is how, I don't know exactly how it happened, but I actually got a message from Flex and he invited me over to his gym. And I think that's because Guy mentioned me in a video I chimed in on like a couple of days later.
Nice.
He gave me a nice plug on Instagram, and Jose was doing something. This is just like at the venue. Jose was doing an Instagram live and those two guys were picking on Jose. So like I got to see all three of those guys and they're talking shit about all the other 212 competitors.
That's great.
It was just hilarious. Yeah. So those guys the sportsmanship and the camaraderie and the brotherhood of those guys is just phenomenal.
I love that.
Just giving each other shit the entire time. Guy gives everybody shit.
Yeah.
And that's just how he is. And Dave fucking loves it. So yeah, those guys, and I can't imagine, you know, of course, when they're out of the country, a whole cluster of them together.
Now, did you guys get a chance to train together?
We just did like arms. We trained arms the day after the guy has an arm day because he needs to bring his arms up. So we just did a little arm training. But they wanted to do fortitude stuff, so we did some muscle rounds and some pump sets.
Oh, nice.
You know, one of the highlights, I can't remember what Tristan's last name is. We had an amateur. He goes by T-Flex on Instagram, and his name's Tristan. I can't remember his last name. Great, great kid. He's doing nationals here in a little bit. And he did a guest posing. He was like our first guest poser. And then Dave, of course, was the main guest poser. And I made sure this happened. I forced him to come out there later with Dave so they could have kind of a pose down. And our MC, like, you know, called off the poses. And, of course, you typically would do that. But Tristan's a really modest guy. He's got a great physique. He's got really good potential. But I forced him out there because Dave, you know, outsizes him considerably.
Okay.
I'm just thinking, I'm like, dude, this, you're going to have this video. This is going to be one of those salient moments that this could drive you through, I don't know how many workouts, in so many ways. I'm making sure this happens because Dave's obviously, you know, basically he's going to be legendary by the time it's done. Like people are, you know, not going to forget him for a long while. That you're going to have you and him on stage. You may not actually ever pose against him as a pro, but you got this. And it was so cool to watch that go down. They had a blast. And he jumped in when we were training, and we kind of Guy was screaming at him in the gym. So we just had kind of like a futz around arm training session with Tristan and actually Sean Lindo hopped in there. So we just had a blast. Just goofing, you know.
So. Yeah, sounds like it. Hey, we were talking about trophies the other week, and you know, I should mention too, guys. Scott and I had recorded an episode. There was some technical issues, so there is officially one episode of Muscle Minds that just is not going to make it out of the can. So I apologize for that. What remind me though, Scott? What kind of trophies did you guys have for that show?
Oh, we had swords.
Swords.
Overall,
that's right.
The overall trophies got overall winners got swords. They were badass.
Yeah,
they were really, really cool. I didn't see them in person, just pictures. They were really, 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 really slick.
Nice.
And you know, nice trophies otherwise. But before we run out of time, Scott, let's switch gears. You've got a whole. I know you're going to document some of this maybe more formally, but tell us about Cali.
Yeah, it was fun, man. It was a lot of fun. The competition out there was really fierce. The guy who ended up winning the overall, this is the Titans Grand Prix in Culver City. The guy who won the overall was just he was amazing, man. Like he looked really good. He was a heavyweight, and he's a client of Milosh's. I got to find a picture of him for you, man. I mean. When we were peeling down to weigh in, I looked at this guy's quads and like I just saw IFBB Pro like written all over those legs, man. It just out of this world ridiculous. So he was great, man. The competition was really good. I ended up taking second in Masters, which I was happy with that. It was the best I had looked. I feel like I could have been a little bit fuller. And so I decided I'm going to compete one more time, which is going to be this upcoming weekend. And I'm going to try to replicate what Shelby and I had done before, only this time I'm going to try to fill out just a little bit more the morning of the show. Just overall, man, really cool experience. I had a lot of fun, you know, spent the week in California and got to train at Gold's, got to hang out with a lot of cool people. You know, Dave Kallick was there. He drove in, you know, he lives like 40 minutes away from Gold's, and he drove in to hang out and talk for a while. So I really appreciated that. That was really nice of him. And, you know, like I said, man, I got to meet a lot of cool people. I saw Tom Platz at Gold's.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I didn't stop him and talk to him or anything. I was a little bit, honestly, I was a little bit starstruck seeing Tom Platz. He's kind of one of my big heroes in bodybuilding.
Was he wearing big, colorful Zubas like pants?
Nah, he was pretty like low key, just wearing sweats and stuff. Just yeah, but he looked like he was getting down there. He had a serious face on, and for that reason, I felt like it's just not a good time to jump in, you know,
right.
And say anything. I mean, the show was really well done. It was a John Lindsay production, and their expediters were great. The way they put the whole thing together was very professional. And like I said, man, I'm kind of bouncing all over the place here, but you know, I talked about it some on Bodybuilding Nerds this past week, and I'll probably, you know, like I've got that video that I'm putting together to release just to kind of document the whole experience. But yeah, overall, take home message for me is, you know, I could be a little bit better if I was a little bit fuller, and I think I could have been just a touch drier. And you know, one of the issues that I found is it doesn't take a lot of carbs to fill me out, and I think that's the mistake I made that first time around four weeks ago. Was I think I overcarbed and then I didn't dry out enough. So then I asked Shelby to help me for this one, and we kept the carbs pretty minimal. I'm talking like 35 grams per meal for the first five meals of the day. And then he had me eat a couple of burgers that night. That was on Thursday. And then Friday, we just went back to 35 grams per meal and then just wrote it in. I didn't really do too much with water manipulation, didn't touch sodium whatsoever. And so I think that's what I'm going to do again, except for, you know, what we did last time was I kept my water normal and then just woke up and didn't drink on Saturday. I think I'll do something similar, but I'll cut the water off just a little bit sooner, just so I get a little bit drier. And then I'm gonna load a little bit heavier on Saturday morning, because I found that through the day on Saturday, once I got more food in me, then the vascularity came out, my pump felt better. And I looked overall just, I think, more the look I knew I could achieve. And so I just want to try to nail that, you know, a few hours sooner next time.
The two examples with James and how Jordan fine-tuned things show by show, and you now on just taking what you did and rearranging it ever so slightly to look as good as you can.
Yeah, and I'm just having fun with it. You know, I mean, I'm definitely, you know, like I always say, I'm not going to turn pro doing this, but I'm definitely putting my heart into it like I always do. And, you know, I've got the passion to continue doing this. So I'm excited to get back to an off season and shift my goals, you know, start focusing more on, you know, everything that I'm doing with radio and business, and slowly start making some progress again, and come back next year and hopefully bring a better package.
What do you want to bring up next year?
Just everything still, man. I everything, you know, everything.
Size.
I feel like, you know, I've learned to do a lot with my back in the last couple of years, but regardless, it still seems to be a lagging body part for me. So I definitely would like to see more back, that's for sure. And, you know, that tendon issue that I've talked to you guys about in my bicep tendon, I need to get that worked on. I need to do something with that, because it's definitely limiting my ability to train chest.
All right. In the shoulder.
Yeah,
I got a dog issue.
Suki.
Yeah.
You know, the thing I was going to say when Jordan was talking about how, you know, you said sort of U-turned on the activation strategies and, you know, focusing, you know, not that he's gone. He's obviously he's not doing foo-foo movements, but he's dropped his load down and tried to make sure he's initiating with the muscle that he's trying to train, and all the things he said. The interesting thing here is that that comes on the heels of, you know, years and years and years of heavy and hard progressive overload oriented training.
Yeah.
To where he's ridiculously strong and put on a massive amount of muscle mass. And the thing that, and I've talked to Ben about this too, and I've had really good conversations with Ben on this topic, that Ben puts forth with, and I don't know Ben's programs in and out. I just know that one of the main things he does, and also that Joe Bennett focuses on, at least from the Instagrams I've seen, is that very thing. And it's from the perspective of a beginner who doesn't maybe know how to use their chest when doing an incline press, or maybe shouldn't even doing an incline barbell press because it's just not suited for it. So they've, you know, they've got the cart before the horse in terms of being able to target the muscle they're trying to make grow on a given exercise or on many of the exercises.
Yeah.
And the Ben's, the criticism with Ben is that because he's focused so much on that, it seems to portray a picture that's so slanted towards, you know, sort of micromanaging exercise selection and movement and, you know, how much supination you have and blah, 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 that you're missing out on the progressive overload aspect of it. And so you've got to, there's a choice to be made along anyone's training history where some people, when they start off as beginners, might fall directly into that category that, that Ben is talking about. Like, you don't know how to train your chest when you're doing pressing movements. We got to figure that out first. Whereas other people might just be gifted such that all barbell movements are awesome chest movements. For instance, the guy, Tristan, that I just mentioned, we were doing triceps. His chest grows no matter what he does. We had this conversation during my seminar about the topic came bringing up weak muscle groups. One of the guys who competed in the show was asking about this. And he was, he said he'd asked Tristan, like, what do you do for your chest? Your chest is phenomenal. He's like, I can't help but my chest grow. Every time I do anything, my chest grows. And he was doing tricep press downs on this dip machine. Actually, I think I have an Instagram of myself on there using the same machine at Tony's gym. And he wasn't even really necessarily aware that he can do those dips, tricep dips on that machine. And if he pulls his elbows back, keep them close to the body, that's gonna favor his triceps over his pecs. He didn't even like know that sort of that basic strategy, or he didn't. He, I mean, maybe he knew that. We were, you know, all of us were huddled around him, so it may have been, you know, a bit starstruck that he's got two IFBB pros helping him train. But he didn't intuit that. He didn't have that sense. So there's that issue, and then people will put the progressive overload too much to the side because it's it can be a lot easier to go and like do a whole bunch of face pulls and foo-foo-y exercises and not buckle down to the heavy and hard shit. But if you're doing the heavy and hard shit and you're using all the muscles but the one you're trying to train, then that's not serving your purpose either. So each case is different, and it's going to vary along a person's training lifetime too. And Jordan's like one example of someone who's, you know, very wisely turning around or sort of re-examining some of his perspectives on this thing. And you, and now you're like, you're in a really interesting spot, which is what makes me bring this up, Scott, because you're like, okay, what am I going to do to bring it my back? Cause you've been training for a while too. Like, you're not a newbie here.
Yeah.
And you haven't, like, I think by your own admission, focused on the progressive overload.
Right.
So do you do that more so? Do you, try to figure out which exercises might work best for you? Like, as Dante Trudell has called it, like, get funky with it. Do you take a fortitude training approach where you do a little both?
Well,
you've got both pump sets and progressive. I mean, you've got options there.
I'll tell you what I've roughly come to so far. You know, listening to you guys talk here on Muscle Minds and applying those things to my chest training, I saw progress in my chest by increasing the amount of sessions that I trained, but reducing the volume per session. I could see doing something similar for back, and I'm not sure how often that means yet. I'm not sure how I'll work that together, but I could definitely see that, you know, when I started doing stuff like Jordan's ideas of, you know, the heaviest set you can first, then reduce 10% and then repeat that for a third time. After I do one exercise like that, like my, if I do a pull down, for instance, that exercise, I am fried. And if I were to train back that way with less volume, but then do it more frequently. I could see that being successful for me, and I could bring like that 110% more than one time per week to the gym. So I'm kind of leaning in that direction.
It's for you, it's like none of above. The frequency is your answer.
It might be. I'm not 100% sure yet.
Or has been. Yeah. So
one of the interesting things is that, so if someone was to ask me now, how do I bring up a lagging body part?
Yeah.
Previously, one of my first answers would have been frequency. That would have probably been the first thing that came out of my mouth. But like, I would have probably forgot to put on the end of that frequency, but with perfect execution.
Yeah.
And then that's where that second part of the sentence now features in my mind in everything I do.
Interesting.
Because of course we can progressively overload everything that we do. And Ben actually had me on a podcast, which was really, really fun. And he showed a side of him that I've actually only experienced in person before. Less so how he has promoted himself online over the previous years. And that's absolutely not a dig at him, because I think he'd be the first to admit that whilst he was competing, his persona was somewhat different. And now he's finished competing, he's in a slightly different place mentally.
Sure.
And he is a lot more of an open book now. And one of the first things that they said was, of course we focus on progressive overload. It's actually a big component of what they do there. But they do it secondary to perfect execution. And
first things first.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that that's something that that is important. And I think in the past, I've previously had the mindset of, well, my form was pretty good there considering how heavy it was.
I see.
And I've flipped that on its head now to, my form is standardized. It's not, okay, yeah, considering that was a 5-plate barbell row, my form wasn't too bad. I'm not going to do that anymore. My form stays as it is, and it doesn't break down. And that, to me now, is, I think, something that I'm going to keep as a standard the whole way through. And then as soon as I can't complete a rep in that fashion, set is over. Because I listened to some really, really interesting stuff by Tom Purvis that again, kind of got me thinking. And he's a good biomechanics teacher. It's probably the best way to describe him now, because his perspective on things is quite interesting. So he has clients in, and so let's say that you're going through a set, and you start the set with immaculate form, like we all do. And as the set goes on, we start to use a little bit more inertia. And a lot of people then think to themselves, well, that's okay, because the first 5 reps were good. And then the second 5 reps got a little bit sloppy, but that's okay, because it's the second 5 reps. His thought process was, considering that as we start to get closer to fatigue, our body will start to recruit muscle fibers in a fashion of it will use what it needs to do the work.
Yeah.
So if we start at 5 reps through the set to use inertia, why will our body start grabbing onto all the muscle fibers it needs to complete the set if it can get away with doing the work without needing to recruit those fibers? Because you've started to use inertia at the exact moment where you really, really don't want to use inertia. So we get to the last 2 reps of a set, and your body is about to grab onto every single fucking muscle fiber you have got. You've kept continuous reps going. You've built up metabolic stress. You've literally done everything that you can do to recruit every single bit of that muscle. That is the exact point where the worst thing you could do is lose that form. Because you're about to reach failure, and you're about to grab everything you've got, and that's it. You've done it. You've ticked that box. And a lot of us don't do that. We'll start to then use more momentum. We'll start to cheat. I did myself, because we think to ourselves, well, that's okay, because we're just going to get those extra couple more reps, because we're counting reps.
Yeah.
We're not thinking internally, how am I recruiting more muscle fibers? So as I get close to the end of a failure set, I'm then thinking to myself, stay on it, stay on it, stay on the muscle, stay on the muscle, stay on the muscle. This form doesn't change, this form doesn't change, this form doesn't change. Right until the point and where you just come to a stop, where you cannot just complete that rep anymore. And that's it. Job done. Box ticked. Hmm. Hypertrophy stimulated. On to the next.
Hmm. This is why I have continuous reps in fortitude training.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I've been guilty of not doing that shit. Scott, you used to tell me off all the time for it. Every time we've trained legs, you'd be like, why aren't you doing continuous reps?
Yeah, keep going. Yeah, keep moving. Keep moving.
Every time you used to do, you were on me for it. But obviously it was this prep where seeing my legs kind of fade away and then listening to some of these things and listening to these insights. And I think that's a really, really nice way to think about it in terms of your body kind of grabbing onto fibers and reminding yourself, stay on it. And then when you get to that last rep, you think to yourself, this is the fucking rep.
Yeah.
This is the one. Do not fuck this rep up. do not fuck it.
Yeah.
You've got all the way here. Let's get this done.
It's like you're running on a treadmill and you need to go 5 minutes and you get to 4 minutes and 45 seconds.
Yeah.
And then you grab the handles to hold yourself up. It's those last 15 seconds didn't count. Yeah. That was the record you were trying to beat.
So when we look around the gym, that's what everyone does. Everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll say to themselves with that exact same thing, well, it's heavy, so my form wasn't too bad considering the weight. No, that's the wrong way.
Yeah.
That's the wrong way to look at it. Let's standardize our form and then get really fucking strong in that fashion. And let's see what happens.
Man. Mm-hmm. Well, listen, I think that's a great place for us to close, guys. I think it's a great message. And I know that myself and probably a lot of other people are going to have that in their head now when they hit the gym today.
Mm. Good.
Oh, yeah.
So, guys, it was great to have you back. Great to talk to both of you. For Jordan Peters and Scott Stevenson, I'm Scott McNally. This has been another episode of Muscle Minds.
Thanks, guys. Good.